This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. First of all, my apologies. It's the holiday season. Things are crazy. So we were not able to get a podcast up the last couple of days. Traffic was the problem, I'll be honest with you. But we finally nailed down the great EJ Raddick for Wednesday. So Leah Hextall will be on tomorrow, so we'll get everything back to normalcy. But I do apologize for all of the issues we had over the last couple of days. How are you,
buddy? Donnie, you're a busy man. You're in Vegas doing the game, then you're rushing back, and you got the two young children you're dealing with, and Nancy is trying to manage things at home, and there's a lot happening.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. And you're right, I didn't get home till 8:30 on Monday morning from Vegas, and it just was not going to work out. And then there's traffic, and oh, boy, whatever. But we wanted to get something on and dive into this Jim Montgomery situation. Of course, former head coach of the Dallas Stars, abruptly fired yesterday. Kind of came as a surprise to a lot of people. And unfortunately, a lot of misunderstandings. Like, investigating this, EJ, credible people in the business, like, just taking the leap that this had something to do with all the stuff that's going on with Bill Peters and stuff, and they couldn't have been more wrong about that. This is something that seems to be completely different, although right now, officially, nobody knows exactly what happened.
Yeah, and, I mean, the one thing, this is what we know from what Jim Nill said yesterday. He said it had nothing to do, and it is not connected in any way with the code of conduct policy that the league put out, and is not any way a similar circumstance to what we saw with Bill Peters. So completely different circumstance than that. What Neil said was that he was contacted by someone on Sunday with information about the head coach. They did a pretty detailed investigation in the subsequent 48 hours or so. And, on Tuesday morning, yesterday morning, they made the decision that they were going to terminate, Jim Montgomery based on, an act, I guess it was an unprofessional, something they felt was unprofessional. And, Neil also said that the incident that triggered all this had occurred a few days prior to the phone call on Sunday. So the Stars were in Winnipeg last week during the week. They came home, they played Winnipeg, they played the Islanders on Saturday, the Jets on Thursday. So that's pretty much all we know about it. There's a lot of scuttlebutt. There's obviously, this is a circumstance that is ripe for speculation. I don't think it does us any good to speculate. We don't know. As we're over time, we may find out more. I would expect Jim Montgomery at some point in time to surface and make a statement of some sort. It's a pretty significant issue, obviously, to lose your job over.
Mm-hmm.
And, I guess we'll go from there. I mean, they're fortunate that they have someone like Rick Bowness, who's been behind an NHL bench as an assistant or a head coach more than anyone in the history of this game. And Rick has been a head coach before, albeit he's been a head coach of some pretty bad teams, and his record is not very good. But he gets an opportunity now to take over a team that does have a lot of talent. So we'll see where it goes. I would imagine this is one of those stories that we'll continue to hear more about it. But, certainly come as a big shock, to me on Tuesday morning going up to work and finding that out. And just kind of been scrambling to find out more details. And I'm sure as time goes on and you can corroborate things you hear, you might will have more on it. But for now, this is kind of where we're at.
Now, I had mentioned at the beginning of this interview that there was people assuming that it had something to do with the code of conduct that was announced by the National Hockey League. And it turned out it doesn't look like that was the case. However, it may be a similarity in the sense of the heightened sensitivity now that owners and general managers have about situations like this, meaning that maybe there isn't necessarily a tie to the code of conduct with what happened with Bill Peters, what Mark Crawford has been accused of, and all that. But is there a heightened sensitivity to when something now happens, there is going to be more swift punishment, where if this had maybe happened a month or two ago, again, not knowing exactly what happened, but is it something that maybe you're a little bit patient over, but in the current climate that we're in, there may be a zero tolerance now?
Yeah, I mean, I think the world is definitely changing, and it's changing by the minute, so we know that. Now, I mean, I think that without knowing exactly what happened, it's hard to say,
right,
you know, what would have the case been, but I think certainly, you know, I think in all walks of society, people in leadership positions and people at high-profile organizations of any kind are under more scrutiny because, you know, let's face it, we know a little bit more about each other through the smartphone and social media and different things. So, you know, I go back to this situation. I'm sure that the Dallas Stars had Jim Nill to fire his head coach that he hired after having a team that played very well last year and is out of an early season funk and has played very well for a while now. For Jim Nill to make the decision to fire that guy and terminate him, I mean, tells you that there was significant evidence that he was had at his disposal to make this kind of hard decision. So, you know, I just think that, you know, we saw the code of conduct thing that was issued by the commissioner. I think there's going to be more scrutiny on hiring procedures for different individuals, and there will be more scrutiny about the things you do in everyday life. You know, for me, I have no idea really what happened. All I can say is I don't know how a head coach in the National Hockey League has time to get himself into any trouble because, I mean, it's a busy job, and this guy's always seemed to be working. So, you know, I guess as time goes on, we'll find out more about it, and we'll see what happens. But for now, you know, the Dallas Stars are off, and they've already played a game with, you know, a win over the Devils last night with Ricky Bonus behind the bench, and they're getting on with things. And, you know, for Jim Montgomery, I mean, he's got a family and children, so, you know, I can only, you know, not, again, I don't know what happened. They say it's not criminal, so that's a good news. I mean, but, like, you just hope that, you know, he takes care of whatever he has to take care of and gets his life in order.
You know, we're just speculating here, so we just have to kind of wait and see, and hopefully, you know, we'll find out at some point. And we'll just to tidy this up with a couple of tweets. Forever TH, has the allegations of firing of these coaches put a black eye on what has been a good regular season so far? And then Courtney saying, hey, guys, with all the coaches being fired and a new code of conduct put by Bettman yesterday, are we going to end up with a witch hunt on our hands and more coaches being fired? Just to address those two, I don't think it affects, you know, the on-ice stuff. I mean, it's a problem, but it's something that I think eventually the game can correct itself by you getting into it, getting closer to the playoffs and all that. But witch hunt, I think, is just a bad term because I think it's time to catch up, right? And if these things were going on, just because they happened a bunch of years ago and just because we were living in a different era doesn't mean they should not be addressed. So I applaud the National Hockey League for doing something about it because, let's face it, EJ, you can't on one hand talk about hockey is for everyone and trying to be open, especially a sport that because of just where it's from and how it's been isn't necessarily as open to a lot of other communities as other sports are. And you're trying so hard to open a bunch of doors and then have these things going on from the past. I mean, you have to address it. You have to deal with it. And I think the NHL is doing the right thing. I don't look at this as a witch hunt. I look at this as trying to maybe correct a long history of things being ignored and evolving and becoming just different. I think this is a good thing. It might not be good for the coaches to get in trouble, and it might stink that a coach might get in trouble for something that they had done a long time ago, but I think this is the only proper way to address these situations, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, let's face it. The world is changing every day, and it's changing in every way. And I think, you know, the National Hockey League is a multi-billion-dollar business, and the commissioner is there to protect the shield. And I think he's there to, you know, I know Gary personally, as you do as well, and I think this is very personal to him. And he takes it very, very seriously, and I think it's much needed. I mean, we want to encourage people of all kinds to play our game and to follow our game because simply, aside from it being morally right, it is very good for business. And so at the end of the day, I think those are two excellent reasons for, you know, the league to do the things they're doing, for the teams to do the things they're doing, and we get moving along with, you know, with the pace of the changing world we live in.
That's very well said. Let's go to the hockey. And
okay,
there's a bunch of things to kind of get into here. We've talked a lot about the San Jose Sharks and the up and downs, and sometimes they look like, what the heck's going on? Sometimes it looks like, all right, they finally have found themselves. Three straight losses, losing 15-3 combined. I mean, they were destroyed down in Florida, lose again last night in Nashville. So can the real San Jose Sharks step forward here? Because this has been a disturbing week for them.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't like their team watching them in October. I thought they were really bad. I give them full credit for the November they had, which was terrific. They seemed to find their way. Now, their schedule was beneficial, and they took full advantage of it. They're still in this, you know, they had this little stretch on the road, which hasn't gone well, but they're coming back home. I believe they play the Rangers on Thursday night.
Yep.
And, you know, they've been better at home. But this, to me, is a flawed team, and I'll be curious to see how things continue to go. And I think Pete DeBoer is doing a terrific job under the circumstances because, you know, the goaltending hasn't been great. Defense has been spotty. They've added the roster is thinner than it has been in the past. So, you know, we'll just have to watch. But I think the league, you look around the league, it's dotted with teams that have had hot runs and cold runs. Minnesota started off really poorly, then got really hot. Now they've lost a couple in a row again. Chicago has had hot streaks. I mean, you go right on through it. I mean, there have been teams that have been up and down. Calgary right now is rolling. They've won six in a row after the Bill Peters situation kind of right as it unfolded. I mean, once they changed coaches and they went to Jeff Ward, who I'm really happy that he's gotten an opportunity. And I think that team is playing like they're relaxed. Because quite frankly, aside from the other things about Bill Peters, I didn't think he was a very good coach. And I think the guys were probably a little tired of him even after only a year and plus. So I think that changes help there. But there's a lot of teams, Donnie, that are Jekyll and Hyde right now. The Sabres in the East had the great start, then the poor November, and now they're trying to get back on track. So there's a lot of teams that are like that right now.
Yeah, now getting to the Bill Peters situation, I mean, I guess it's not coincidental, although they probably didn't know about any of the allegations leading up to his firing. But you're right. Maybe it's just the change was necessary because they've won six in a row. Milan Lucic is now scoring. He went from no goals to now three. Monahan's been good. He scored his 10th last night. Gaudreau scored as well. I mean, this is a Flame team that just is, no pun intended, on fire.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I would just say this as we move forward, and I'm around young hockey players, albeit at a much different level, but, you know, young people. And, you know, it's a different world now. And, you know, when I was growing up, I mean, the coaches could hammer every nail, you know, the same way. And I think for coaches now, they have to have a much different approach. They have to be much smarter. They have to empower their players. And I see that in Jeff Ward in Calgary. You know, I could see that, you know, with a Ricky Bonus maybe in Dallas. I mean, these are people that the first thing, you know, we've seen it with Ralph Kruger. I heard talk to Jack Eichel last week. The first thing he said about Ralph Kruger, just a great human being. And I think that's a big part of things now. So, I think that's going to be different. And I think that Bill Peters probably was under some people's skin there with that group, and they were struggling. And I don't, quite frankly, I don't think Bill Peters is a very good coach outside of the fact, you know, but aside from the other stuff, just judging him on what I've seen him do in this league with Carolina and Calgary. They had a good year last year in Calgary. They do have a good roster, but, you know, I think that change that came about in a very obviously an unusual way could end up being really helpful for the Calgary Flames.
Rangers are a little frustrating, and since now you're coaching a little bit and been around the game forever, help me out with something that's just become very frustrating, and that is the broken record of we need to shoot more.
Yes.
And they know it. They talk about it. David Quinn brings it up usually at the morning skate or when we talk to him an hour and a half before faceoff. They talk about it at the end of every period, and they don't do it. And it's and last night was another perfect example of it. I mean, the Kings just have their number, right, at four straight losses. Yeah. And you kind of just had a feeling that was going to be a tough game for the Rangers. Kings, as bad as they are, very good at home. That was their 10th win at home last night. Yeah. But you look at the Corsi numbers, and, you know, they were beaten up pretty bad by the Kings. Get pucks to the net. And Dave Maloney's theory is that it's in the DNA of the European player, whether it's Kako, Panarin, Zibanejad, make a play, not shoot. But, you know, Kako aside, you know, Zibanejad's been in this league for a while. Panarin's having a really good season, but Is it just, are they too nice? Are they too unselfish? But how do you have an edict every single game, and every single game it continues to be a problem?
Well, you know, first of all, I was watching the game last night, and I heard Joe Micheletti talk about it after the game, and I was reminded of a Ranger analyst from another era.
Oh, yeah.
Bill Chadwick.
Mm-hmm.
And for the fans who, you know, I don't know if there's any fans old enough to listen to this podcast that would even remember Bill Chadwick, but he had that mantra with Barry Beck many years ago. Shoot the puck, Barry!
Right.
Shoot the puck, because Barry Beck had a big shot. He was a big defenseman that played in the late 70s and 80s, mostly, you know, for the Rangers. He started in Colorado. For those young fans, he was with the Colorado Rockies, not the Colorado Avalanche.
Right.
And eventuated to the Rangers in a multiplayer deal and was a big deal at the time. But to get back to the present, you know, I think Joe Micheletti said it great last night on the broadcast afterwards. So he talked about the idea of when you shoot the puck, you do a couple of things. You force the goaltender to make a save. You force the defender to make a decision. You force, you know, you've turned the defense around. You don't know where the rebound is going unless you're particular with your shot. There's a lot of guys that will do that shot, that, you know, pass off the pads play, which can be very helpful in this league where the goaltenders are so good now. So shooting the, and also the thing you do is you give your opponent the idea that, yes, you will shoot. Because when opponents don't fear you shooting, they can stand back and defend, and they don't have to turn. They can just kind of keep you on the perimeter. And I think you have to get to the inside in this league. I say it to the kids all the time, and I've been saying it for years about hockey, and coaches have been saying it. It's nothing new. You have to get to the middle of the ice. That's where the net is. You have to defend the middle, and you have to get to the middle. And sometimes by shooting the puck, that's the best way to get the puck into the middle of the ice, around the net, and create a little bit of chaos. Last night in the game, they were on the power play, and I'm not sure. It might have been Kako who shot the puck, but it came to the net. Kreider was there on the rebound, and a nice little touch backhand pass to Panarin, who put it in. It's seemingly a simple play, but, you know, these guys, David and his group, they watch it very closely. They feel they need more shots. I think what Dave Maloney says about the DNA of the European player, I would say the DNA of the skill player,
yeah,
more so than even the European player, is to try to make plays. But the good players start to realize that, you know, each decision that you encounter in a game is a little different, and you have to do different things to keep your opponent, you know, honest from not being able to defend a certain way against you all the time. So clearly, that is something that the Rangers have to do more, and they'll just have to keep working at it.
Yeah, just and David Quinn even says too, is that every time you pass up a shot, you could be passing up three or four shots. Because sometimes that shot results in a rebound, results in other opportunities. So it just, I just thought about it because I was doing the pre and post last night, and I can't tell you how many times that gets bantied around, and it just, and I think they could be better for it. And, you know, they got the split so far, the first two games on this Western swing. As you said, they'll be in San Jose coming up on Thursday, and then Anaheim Saturday to wrap things up. All right, Boston, are they just a little bored? Is it just something that happens? I mean, they went how long, the entire season, without losing in regulation at home? Now back-to-back losses. I guess the Avalanche one's forgivable. And I know Ottawa's playing better, but that was still a surprise to see the Senators walk into Beantown and come away with 2 points.
Well, I think the game was in Ottawa. So that's
Was that in Ottawa?
I believe it was in Ottawa on Monday night. And so, but, you know, listen, the Senators have been a hard...
You're right. I'm sorry. I apologize.
That's okay. The Rangers, you know, had trouble with Ottawa. And, you know, Boston is a high-end team. They got off to a great start. But then, let's face it, they're not to be confused with the 1978 Canadians. I mean, they're not going to go through the year and lose 8 games. I mean, they're going to have losses. They're going to have stretches where they struggle. I mean, in the last seven... Now, the last seven games for the Bruins, they're 4-2-1, so that's the good news. But their power play has cooled off dramatically. They've been held to 3 goals or fewer in all those games, because most likely because the power play has kind of has slowed down, just 2-for-20 in that stretch. You know, so those are concerns for the Bruins. They get Bergeron back the other night, so that's good news. But I think this is the Bruins need to have that power play going, because they don't have a tremendous wealth of scoring behind that top line at this point. And at least with Bergeron back, Krejci goes into the second center hole, Coyle goes into the third center hole, so it makes things a little bit easier for them. But, you know, this is a really good team. They got great culture. They got great players. You know, but there nobody's perfect, and this league is hard, and its games are close. And, you know, I'll be curious tonight. They play the Washington Capitals, who had a similar fate on Monday. They play the Columbus Blue Jackets team that has been struggling to score. The Jackets went into Washington and won 5-2. So I think both clubs will be really eager to play tonight. It's a great matchup. It could be an Eastern Conference final. The one thing about Boston and Washington is that the Washington Capitals have really owned that matchup. They've won 15 of the last 16 games between these two teams, and they won earlier in the season in a shootout. So great, great measuring stick game tonight.
Yeah, it should be fun.
Sure, both teams will be ready to play tonight, and there won't be any looking ahead to anything else.
All right, NBC Sportsnet's got it, so that's a great matchup, two great teams. And also, we get a break because these two teams are in different divisions. So if these are two, if they are indeed the two best teams in the Eastern Conference, rather than a second round matchup like we got with Nashville and Winnipeg a couple of years ago, that we can actually get these two teams playing in the conference final, which I think would be tremendous.
It won't happen
because of the stupid format. It may not happen because they lost.
That's correct.
Which is the more.
It won't happen because of the format. It'll happen because somebody loses.
And also, EJ, something that happens, and you could be repetitive about it, but it still takes place, is there is something to that first home game after a long road trip, right?
Yeah.
The Capitals had that great Western swing, come back home, lose to Columbus. Vegas had that great Eastern swing, their first game back against the Rangers, get shut out 5-0 in their own building. So there is something to that first game at home after a long road trip.
Yeah, it can change the dynamic of your group, and depending upon what kind of team you have, you know, if you have an older group that has, you know, families and those kind of challenges to take care of, and they've been back home after a long trip. After all, these are all they're all human beings, and they're dealing with the day-to-day problems that we all have. So, yeah, it's a little bit of a struggle, and you know, it bites you once in a while, and it bit the Caps, I think, a little bit on Monday night.
Yeah, it did, because that was just a strange. And no offense to Columbus, but Washington is just so much better.
And you know what? There's always matchups, Donnie. Like we used to do the show. I used to say, you know, the playoffs are always about injuries and matchups, right? How healthy are you and who you're playing? And the Columbus Blue Jackets, John Tortorella brought it up. They seem to play well in that building, and they're not a bad matchup for the Caps, because even though they don't have as much skill as they had before, they're a big, strong team.
Yeah.
And so are the Washington Capitals. The Washington Capitals can't, you know, they can't exert their will physically in a game on the Jackets as they might be able to do against other teams.
All right, we want to go to some tweets.
Let's do it.
All right, our buddy Chris says, "Hi guys. On Friday, I saw a quote from Nathan McKinnon that he'd take less money on his next contract to stay in Colorado. What's the likelihood that what he's really saying is he'd stay and take less money if Taylor Hall is acquired?"
Well, he's got a couple of years to go on his deal, so I mean, there's nothing imminent there, and you know, he was give the Colorado Avalanche organization a lot of credit because they got out ahead of Nathan McKinnon, and he wasn't statistically, he wasn't the Nathan McKinnon we know now when they signed that contract with him a couple of years back. I mean, yes, he was their first overall pick, and he was a key young player in their group and a key core guy, but you know, when they signed that $6.3 million contract, I think it's a 7-year deal over the course, you know, and before the 16-17 season, you know, he wasn't quite that same guy offensively. I mean, going into 16-17, he had 52 points in 72 games. So they were making a statement there that he was a core guy, and they got ahead of it, and it's worked out for him because he has taken off, and now he's among the very handful of very best players in the league, and he's had 290-point season and is on his way to maybe 100-point season this year. So you got to give Joe Sakic and you know, that group there a lot of credit for doing a good deal. Now, as for the next one, when the time comes for McKinnon to do his next deal, I guess we'll have to see what the landscape is and wait to see where that organization is and see if they may have won Stanley Cups, you know, in that time. I mean, he's not going to be looking at this again until the summer of 2023. So a lot of things can change between now and then. But I would tell you this. Nathan McKinnon is not going to be given away too much money.
No, I don't think so either.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing I liked about what he said is he's a guy that comes from really, you know, very modest beginnings growing up in Nova Scotia. And to be making, you know, $6.3 million a year, or to be having a contract that's worth $44 million, he's very well aware of how fortunate, you know, he has been as a really talented professional athlete. So we'll see what happens with him down the road. But the great news for the Avalanche is that they don't have to worry about it for several more years.
Aaron asks, should the Islanders be getting more play in the Taylor Hall conversation? We know how good they are defensively, and they made a big offer to Panarin. Maybe Hall puts them over the top offensively. And what extra would they have to give New Jersey for the, quote, division tax?
Well, I mean, I would say this, is that, you know, both teams at this point, Ray Shero is looking to get his team better. I mean, that's really the first and foremost thing he's looking to do. And he's got a lot of work to do there, Donnie. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are, the cupboard is kind of bare when it comes to defense and goaltending right now. So any team that is in the mix for Taylor Hall, I'm sure that Ray is looking to add young defensemen of some decent quality to his group. Now, you're not going to, like, when you talk about Colorado, I don't think they're going to get Bowen Byram out of Colorado, but they might get Connor Timmins. Like the Islanders, I don't think the Islanders will be looking to trade Noah Dobson for a rental of Taylor Hall. But, you know, maybe they have some other defensemen in their group, depending upon the volume of guys they have there. They might be willing to move. I think that, Ray would probably love to get a goaltender, of some sort to add to his mix as well. So, when I look at it, Colorado and Arizona kind of have those things that they can afford to move in a trade. I don't know if the Islanders have quite as much of that, but really it will depend upon what teams are willing to give up. And as I've said to you before, Don, we look at these circumstances with high-profile guys who are most likely rentals. The package you usually get for them are, a B-plus prospect, a B prospect, a first-round draft pick, the contingency draft pick on whether you resign him, and then maybe another player. So that's what the package is, and we'll see, what Ray is able to do. But, I think if the Islanders were offered something significant, I think that certainly Ray would listen. And, I think those Ray and Lou have a relationship, and, Ray's job is to make the team better. And, another thing to be concerned about for the Devils, if Sammy Vatanen is an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year, and that's an area they need to shore up, and he would have a lot of value too. So do they trade him? Do they try to keep him? If I'm Vatanen, I look at it and say, hey, why do I necessarily want to stay here right now unless you really want to overpay me, because I could go to market as a right shot defenseman and probably have a lot of offers myself. So that's another guy that the Devils have to concern themselves.
Yeah, all that, and who's going to coach the team? I mean, they just have a lot of work to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, and to that point, Andrew says, greetings, Don and EJ. Do you perhaps have a creative mixed drink suggestion that I can concoct when it's deep in the throes of another effortless display of New Jersey Devils hockey? Many thanks. I tried to watch a little bit of that game. Unfortunately for me, when I've got a bunch of games on, Devils are going to lose the face-off. I mean, Devils stars were interesting only because I wanted to see how they're going to respond to the firing of Jim Montgomery. But, now the Devils are just a bad hockey team, period. And bordering on unwatchable. And I feel bad because I think Cangelosi does a great job. Danico does a great job. But you're right. The level of mess they are right now, and then add to the fact that whether it was delusional or not, the expectations were high. That's always a bad combination, right? When expectations are high and then you bottom out to this level.
Yeah, that is a bad combination for sure. I mean, they've got some big decisions to make moving forward. We talked about Hall. We talked about Vatanen. I think they're most likely going to buy out Corey Schneider at the end of the season unless something changes for him in the minors. But, I mean, that's something that they'll likely have to do. He's got a couple more years on his contract right now, two more years after this. So, that's something they're going to have to do. And I think they're, I'm quickly getting to thinking that they might have to be in a similar circumstance with PK Subban, because, it has not gone well for Subban thus far. And I know it's not all on him, and they don't have a lot of depth there, not a lot of support for him. With on defense, the goaltending has been real shaky. But, I mean, I think PK has, like, 1 point in the last, like, 6 weeks. And, when you watch him playing, you talk to people around the league, the people who watch the players, for how their, scouts getting better, getting work. I mean, there are no good reports
right
on his game right now, zero. So I think, you know, when I look at them, I think these guys, they always have to train harder as they get older in this league. PK's only 30, but, you know, in this league where there's a lot of youth, he's got to train. I think he's got to train harder. I think he's got to train different. I think he's got to try to get leaner. And, you know, I don't know where he's going to be at in his career right now. I know this, that, you know, after the Devils lost three consecutive games and their coach got fired, PK was at, you know, he was at the Bryant Park doing an event for Red Bull. And, like, I know these things get scheduled in advance, and PK's very conscious of his image and his brand, but sometimes you maybe you have to postpone or cancel a thing like that just because the timing isn't good. So I've always liked PK. He's been a great player in this league for a while now. He won a Norris Trophy. He's part of Team Canada winning a gold medal. He's only 30 years of age, but, like, the Devils brought him in to be a player for this team, to help this team get better. And I think that, you know, he's got to determine how he's going to go about doing that in the next short bit of time.
Right.
And if there's no improvement, Don, over the next few months, and we're at the end of the season and we're at the same place, I mean, I really do think they have to consider buying him out.
And you just said it in a very, very nice way. There's a lot of other people who share that same opinion. I share that same opinion. I think it's a tough spot for PK. I'm a fan of his. I think he's an outstanding player, but you're right. Now he's 30.
He's a terrific personality.
Right. You're playing defense at the age of 30 in a league where 18 and 19 year olds are excelling. Okay. So now you're 30. 30 is the new 40 as far as sports are concerned, right? So you've got to work harder, and he's in a tough spot. Not to excuse him, but a lot of the things that you're saying about him, the events and the commercials and, you know, the Lindsey Vonn stuff and going to the award ceremonies, that's kind of what the Devils were signing up for too, right? I mean, yeah. In the post-Lamoriello era, they're trying to get attention. And bringing PK in, yeah, it was a hockey move, but it was also, hey, this is one of the most recognizable faces in the sport. He's playing for the Devils. He's marketable. So he may be feeling like you said, maybe he should have canceled that event with Red Bull. He may feel the pull of, I can't cancel it because this is kind of what the Devils want me to do. So they've got to find religion as a team and sit him down and say, listen, we love the celebrity aspect, but it's not going to matter if we're in last place. We've got to get to work and make you a better hockey player and then let everything else kind of fall into place. Because if you're playing at a Norris Trophy level and this team's starting to win, then all the other stuff is going to happen anyway. You know, I kind of blame the Devils as much as I blame PK for it.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it. They were looking for, you know, a bump that way, and, you know, they were hoping to have everything. But, I mean, listen, to be a player in this league, it's a commitment of time and effort on a daily basis. And guys are, you know, I said it when I was scouting way back when, guys are getting better and getting worse every day. Nobody's staying the same.
Right.
And that's the way it goes. And, you know, as for these marketing things, I'll add one other thing to this, Don, real quick, is that in Dallas, you know, after this incident with Jim Montgomery, you know, people are going, they're speculating, they're wondering what's going on. And Emily Kaplan tweeted out a radio interview that Montgomery did with The Ticket in Dallas, which is kind of wise guy radio down there. I mean, that's, you know, you're in this business, you know how it works way better than me. But at the end of the day, the interview was this thing, Monty on Monty, and it was a gentleman that his last name starts with Monty, so it's Montague or something. I don't know who he is. And with Jim Montgomery, and he would ask a very detailed hockey question and then ask really what I could only call or describe as kind of a crude question. And Montgomery, you know, answered them, and he didn't really sound great. He was playing along, but, you know, it wasn't a good look. And, you know, in doing some homework on it, I found out that one of the reasons that that he did it and the Stars were okay with it was, and it's a series of kind of interviews they do, was that they were looking for that attention in the market on the Ticket radio station, which is the flagship of the team, and sports radio, you know, one of the big sports radio stations there and in the country. So you have to, I think, determine and over time, no matter what it is, when you're putting your personnel, whether it be a coach or player, in these situations to do more outside of the game, I mean, it can really backfire for you. And, you know, a lot of people did listen to that interview yesterday and kind of shook their heads because it was an odd spot for a head coach to be in. I could never imagine a David Quinn doing that interview or a John Hines when he was with the Devils, or really most of the guys that are coaching in the league. Not that Jim Montgomery was a bad guy about it, but it was just an odd position for him to be in as a head coach.
Yeah, but that always comes to me EJ, and I remember having this conversation with Rex Ryan, with his head coach of the Jets, and he wanted to do Hard Knocks. And it's like, yeah. Coach, if you win, all this stuff is going to come to you. All this attention is going to come to you.
Exactly.
But unfortunately,
yeah.
live in a world where you can't rely on winning. Only one team wins. But, you know, listen,
correct.
Dallas didn't have to do this when they first moved down there, right? And when Mike Madonna was winning cups. But, you know, now it's a little bit of a different story, and they're not as winning at the same clip. And you got to do that. I mean, that's, you know, it's unfortunate. But you got to pick and choose. You got to be smart.
Yep.
And because at the end of the day, it's your reputation, it's your credibility, and it's your team's credibility that's on the line there. So I'm glad you brought that up. That's a really good point. So, EJ, I want to wish you a happy and healthy holiday season. Because we'll probably shut it down until I come back from the holidays, because I'm going to be going on vacation and such. So
very nice. I hope you, and the same to you. You know, you and Nancy and the kids. I hope they have a great Christmas, New Year's, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
It's great. This is a great time with small children, too. So that's awesome. And anytime you need me, you know I'm here for you.
And right back at you with the family. The kids are getting older. They're starting to appreciate Christmas more. And I'm sure you're going to have hockey tournaments and everything else going on as well. Yeah. So
we're busy.
I love you, man. Thank you for this and everything that you do, man.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right. That's the great EJ Raddick. And, of course, he'll rejoin us again when we come back in January. One more podcast tomorrow with Leah Hextall. And then we're going to shut it down for the holidays, because I'm going to be away and it's going to be kind of tough to get everything together. So rather than pull what we had the last couple of days where I think I'm going to do it and I can't do it because of traffic, or I get pulled in this direction, that direction. So we'll wrap it up tomorrow with Leah, and then we'll come back in January. Probably, I think January 2nd is when we'll come back, and then we'll kind of just hit the ground running and try to do it every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for the rest of the regular season. So if you need to get in touch with me, at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct, that's always the way to do it. Back tomorrow with Leah Hextall. Have fun. This was the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct podcast wherever you get your podcasts.